Welcome to the Twee Couch Guitar Therapy Session, where we talk about all things guitar related. My name is Dr. T, and I am not a licensed therapist, but I play one on a podcast. Today on the Twee Couch, we are counseling on essential amps. By now, we all know that I love Marshall amplifiers, but I also love my Fender and my Vox. Of course, boutique amplifiers are incredible too, and I've really enjoyed my Dr. Z, Clark, and Mesa amps. Then there's Lloyd with his Soldano, Reason, and Naylor, and oh, Jason's Car. Oh, there's so many good ones. But what amps do we need? Why do we need more than one? Is every amp competing with a Fender? What classifies something as a bedroom amp? How does wattage factor in? How do we decide what's essential? Does nostalgia matter? Are Dumble amps even all that special? Can I narrow it down to just one amp? And half stacks? Who are they really for? Well, we will discuss this and more on this group therapy session with Lloyd on the Tweed Couch. Well, Lloyd, thank you so much for being here on the couch to be able to talk about these essential amplifiers, these necessary amplifiers that we need. Now, I want to make sure that I do clarify something because I just said the word need, and I'm really not talking about need. We're talking necessary. So it depends. I know it depends. And we're going to get into all of that. So thank you, Lloyd, for being here on the couch.
Hey, Doc. It's really good to see you. I need some therapy, though.
Yeah. What are you smoking?
This is a New World, very rare cigar for me to get this because they usually cost way too much on cigar bid.
Yeah.
But I won this bid in an assortment of 10 cigars and it was in there as one of them. And so I brought it out for this special moment and I hope I don't burn your couch. Apologize in advance if I do.
So one of the things that I want to make sure that we take off the table right now, because a lot of people are going to be like, all right, it's just a matter of time. You're talking about these essential, these necessary amps, and you're going to bring up modelers, just take care of all of it. And I'm going to say right now, we're going to take modelers off the table.
Ooh, all right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about amplifiers. It needs to have some speakers. It needs to have some transformers. It could or could not have tubes. It's the real deal. We're doing it. And what spawned all of this was actually that I bought a new guitar.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I started looking at all of my guitars and I went, wow, like, are there essential guitars that I need? And then as I looked around the room, I went, are there essential amps? And then I asked you and I asked Jason, maybe we should do this. And Jason turned me down and you said yes. So, hey, we're here. This is happening.
I was thinking, you know, amps always come up when we talk because, you know, I've got a problem with amplifiers. Just like I'd like to think you would admit to yourself that you have a problem with guitars.
Well, some might call it a problem. I don't call it a problem.
Okay. Yes. So one of us is willing to admit that they have a problem. We'll let the listener decide who it is. But
your problem is that you don't have enough guitars. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. It is a problem. You're exactly right. You talk to my wife. So I was like, you know, it'd be fun to talk about guitars, you know, more, you know, because we don't do that much. But in reality, I thought, yeah, there's probably some other people might be better at that than I am, because I don't have nearly the collection that you or Jason have.
Yeah, and Paul's working on his.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Oh, that's true. Beth. Beth's got a good collection.
Oh, yeah.
Shouldn't leave her out of that.
More and more. Yeah, but that's because her husband's an enabler.
It's because of Jeremy.
Yeah.
That's right.
So with all of that, I do think it is important for us to realize that we do currently live in the golden age of gear because there is no shortage of amazing things out there. So that's where things become difficult because one could say, oh man, I need this amp. While somebody else is going, is it a need or is it a want? Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. So then it comes down to necessary. Okay, is it necessary for what you want? And there might be some different areas in which necessity might take place. Like, for example, purpose matters. Maybe your purpose is just to learn some guitar. You're a bedroom player. Maybe you used to play out and you don't anymore, and you just want something that you can play in the bedroom and love it. So what are your thoughts, first of all, on a bedroom amplifier?
Well, when I lived down in Texas, still being a child of the 80s, I had a small Rat Gear setup. So I guess I was able to turn it down pretty low because it was a Mesa Boogie solid-state amplifier.
Yeah.
It's really the only time in my life that I've had to worry about volume, you know, was really there. Because even when I was in college, I was thinking about this the other day, actually. My first real tube amplifier was that 50-watt Ampeg. It had four 10-inch speakers in it.
And nice.
I brought that to my dorm room in college. And I played that in my dorm room in college. And I never heard anyone complain about it. And I know it had to be crazy loud. I know there were times that right before spring break or right before we were getting out, we were done with our finals in May. You know, windows are open because it's warm out now. I cranked up the stereo to my favorite Loverboy tune. And I started playing along with this tune. Loving every minute of it. And I had that pretty loud. Yeah. And I went, there's no way you could get away with that in a dorm room now.
Yeah.
That I didn't. I don't think so. I was thinking about it the other day. But so that's never really been a big problem for me. I know that on the forums, a lot of guys talk about playing with headphones on, even with their, they'll have like a big iron amplifier, which means like big transformers, you know, 50 or 100-watt. And then they run it through an attenuator with a line out and they play it with their headphones. But they're like, oh, they got those tubes of cooking, but they don't want to bother their wife or their dog or their newborn child. And right. So many guys do that. I've never worried about needing to do that. It's kind of too bad we were born at the wrong time. You know, It's like when we were, you know, just starting to play guitar, that was kind of the end of the golden age of people expected guitar to be loud and they expected to hear it. And so they tolerated it. And I think that goes back to my dorm room experience. They just, this was the way it was, you know, where now people have been conditioned to see guitar, but not hear guitar. And that's what they want.
Yeah.
I think there's a place for bedroom amps. I find them myself not being all that pleasing to play. And I think that's probably because I'm used to being able to crank an amp up. You know, it's like our friend, Kenny at Solid Body Guitars. He would always like to say, you know, it all sounds good compared to what? And
right.
I've experienced the what, and so the just sounds good doesn't really do it for me much anymore. So I'm not a big fan of small bedroom amps. But I guess they have their place. I just don't need to use them.
And I'm glad you said that, because I actually find myself in a very similar position, because I look at bedroom amps and I go, well, what do you define as a bedroom amp? Like, are we talking about 70 decibels? Are we talking 80 decibels? Are we talking 90 decibels? Like, I don't know, what do you define as a bedroom amp? Because the fact is I don't necessarily know that a bedroom amp that sounds amazing is really a thing.
Yeah, because even a, you know, people consider a bedroom amp more by wattage, I think. And so they're talking really like 5 watts or less, or down to 1 watt. Well, a 1 watt amplifier turned up is louder than anybody would want to really hear it in today's world. I mean, it would be very loud in the house. So even bedroom amps really, I think that's why a lot of the guys use headphones.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that goes back to something else we'd said before, that people are used to playing their guitar with in-ears. So to practice at home with their headphones on or their in-ears is what they're used to anyway. So they can get away with a small little practice amp with a line out and be perfectly fine.
Yeah, I would actually agree that, you know, if we were to do like a solid state amplifier, solid state amplifiers are fine, you know, with the right amount of pedals and, you know, different little drives or whatever, you can make it have that like broken up sound. So I would say, yeah, a solid state makes sense and that's good. But at the same time, my bedroom amp, whenever I go, you know what, I want to stay a little bit quieter and I want to play, A lot of times what I do is I plug in to my Fender Tweed Pro Junior amp. It's one of those like ones from the early 90s that was made in America, but it's not like a hot rod, but it turned into the hot rod series that they started making over in Mexico. I play that, and I remember playing it going, it's not quite right, you know, and I turn it up a little bit more, and I go, it's not quite right, and I turn it up a little bit more, and I go, well, maybe I just don't like the EQ of it. And then I stuck the Joyo American sound in front of it. And then all of a sudden I was like, ooh, I can make it sound more twin-like, or I can make it sound more basement-like. It's not a twin. It's not a basement. But at the same time, it's more twin-like, basement-like, whatever. And I would find a sound that I go, man, I really like this amp. This is a great amp. And then I'll look at my decibel meter and I realize I'm playing at like 95 dB, 90 dB. Mm-hmm. Well, the Marshall plays at 100.
Yeah.
Am I really that much quieter? And so that leads me back to, I really don't think there is such a thing as a bedroom amplifier if we take modelers off the table.
Yeah. And I have found that I mentioned earlier about big iron. Guitarists talk about big iron, and so what they mean by that is the big output transformers, like 50 or 100 watt versus the 5 watt small little dinky little things. And there is a different tonal characteristic that you get from the bigger output amplifiers, transformers, I should say, than from the smaller ones. And so I find that I like big iron amplifiers, even turned down when I'm playing clean. You know, clean with an overdrive pedal or something in front of it. I actually prefer playing my Marshall turned down relatively clean and quiet with an overdrive. I actually prefer that than playing, you know, like a small little amplifier that we would use a tone word and say, well, that just sounds boxy.
Yeah, right.
The PV Classic 30s, I think we're really guilty of this. You know, a lot of people have problems with the Classic 30s. A better speaker helps them out a lot, but really what helps them out is just turning them up. You know, the 30-watt amplifiers, they can be really, really loud. When they're turned down quiet, they use the term boxy because they kind of sound like a cardboard box.
Yeah.
It's not warm and crisp. It's just kind of thud right in the middle. You know, it's just kind of,
It's kind of bland. It's that mid-shift. Yeah. Actually, the best way to put it is not that this mid-shift is a peak, as much as it's something that you want to turn into a valley on an EQ spectrum.
Yeah.
Like you look at it and you go, man, how do I take that out of the equation? Yeah. Not, look at this wonderful thing it's presenting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I like that.
And the right speaker can help that. But at the same time, you can't necessarily take the box out of a tiny little amp.
Yeah, no.
So this is probably worth jumping over to the other side. And this is where you and I have been very fortunate to live for many, many years. And because of that, your wife and my wife is very accommodating to that. We get this beauty of being a gigging musician. We have the ability to go, you know what? I got to turn this thing up to 100 and it sounds good. And sometimes it ends up being 105 dB. And it sounds good. And as long as it's not too long, they can be tolerant for quite a while. And so we're fortunate with that.
Yeah, of course, I've been kicked out into the crib, but, you know.
That's fair.
She's very tolerant of me being 300 feet away from the house when I play.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of girl she is.
Does she ever, like, have you in the house and you're annoying to her and she goes, hey, I think your amps need a little bit of attention out in the crib.
When we lived in Minnesota, we bought a house. We called it our Kentucky home because it was on Kentucky Avenue. Mm-hmm. And me being a general contractor, and she's been around me my entire life, or our entire life together. Even the few years that we knew each other before we got married, she knows that I've always been building stuff, that kind of thing. So she understands that I like to insulate all the walls. And not everybody does that. The interior walls aren't necessary to insulate, generally, but it really knocks down sound. And our Kentucky home, whoever did the basement before we moved there, there was no insulation in any of the walls. And so when I was playing down in the basement, she would often comment about how much she really wished there was insulation in the walls.
That's not a knock on your playing. No.
It's not a knock on my plane.
That's fair. So with that said, it really does make a difference whether you're a gigging musician or not on the necessity, the essentialness of an amplifier, because to a lot of people, compact might matter. So for you, does compact matter as a gigging musician? Does it need to be a small amp?
It never has. I believe in wheels. And yes. So, and you know, and cases are a great thing. So even when I was, you know, touring with a half stack, having wheels on the cab, the 412 cab, and the head in a case that sit right on top of those wheels,
yep.
Rolling them right out of the trailer and rolling them into wherever we were playing, piece of cake. You know, when I hear people talk about, you know, you'll hate that Vox AC30, you know, years ago when you have to carry it up and down the stairs. And we heard about it, I've never really had to do that. You know,
yeah.
Very rarely do I play someplace where I need to carry things up and down stairs like that. Never have, except for when we toured in Europe and played in a school where we had to carry everything four flights of stairs up to the fourth floor. And that one is burned into my back forever. But
that is also the exception, not the rule. So I will give it that.
It has been for me. Now, there might be a lot of guys that are like, oh, man, always having to carry up those up to the into the club, carry up the steps. I don't know. For me, it's so whether it's small or big, it's always in a case anyway. And it's on wheels. And even when I didn't travel with a case and an amplifier, it had wheels. Never a big deal for me.
Right. So what's interesting to me about this is I truly believe that everyone should own a half stack at some point in their life.
Preach it.
Whether they are a bedroom player or whether they are a church musician or they are a touring musician or whatever, they need to own a half stack. And the reason why is because it does sound super cool with four beautiful speakers just flying at you. All the sound. It's so good. Now, that said, when I toured with Second Adam, I played the half stack with the head, and there were zero complaints about how loud it was or how big it was or whether it fit in the trailer or how difficult it was to push. And the reason why was because if I ever decided to bring the Mesa Caliber 22 that I had or the Vox AC15 I had or the Fender Princeton Chorus that I had, which was a solid state, those are smaller amps. And if they were on wheels, it actually hurt your back to bend over and push that thing.
Mm.
And if it wasn't on wheels, like my Princeton Chorus did not have it on wheels, you had to carry it. And now all of a sudden it's more of a burden. It actually was better to have the larger object.
Yeah.
On
tour. Because you can stack stuff on top of it. I even put my pedal board on top of that. I had my amp, my pedal board, and everything. I'd roll the whole thing in at once.
And Todd's bass.
Yeah, because he'd never carry that. So somebody had to
carry
it.
No, he would never carry his bass. That's terrible. Who would have thought he would have actually carried something? He's probably the fittest of all of you.
Diva.
he doesn't carry anything.
His back's better. That's very true. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, also, didn't your bandmates actually prefer your Marshall too, though? When you brought out the smaller amp and you tried it, they were like, bring the Marshall out.
Yes, that's true. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that the Marshall cut so well through a mix and it gave a feeling on stage. And so like the vibe, like just the sound, the sheer amount of volume actually aided in the energy that we all felt.
Sure.
And so they appreciated the Marshall and they liked the look of the Marshall. It's a sexy looking amp.
And I think that too, when you said you wanted to talk about, you know, essential amps and didn't know exactly what direction you were going to take this. And I still don't actually.
Neither do I.
But but there is something to the look. You know, when you talk about essential, you know, depending on what kind of genre you're playing, there is something, as you were saying, did it having that Marshall back there? I mean, how many bands have we seen over the years at the music festival stages that will bring out cabs that don't even have speakers in them? Or they'll just have fold up looks like a full stack with a bottom and a top cab, but all they did is fold it up and put a latch together. And from the front, it's just a false thing. They're not functional. You couldn't even put speakers in them because they don't function that way. But from the audience, they look like a big stack of Marshalls up there. And there is something about, depending on what you're doing and what you're playing, that's part of it.
It actually was one of the things we talked about with Second Adam was maybe we make a bunch of cabinets and we use them as road cases. Hmm. And then when we go on stage, we just put them on stage and we grab our mic stands out of it and we grab our mics out of it and all that because it was like, it looks cool. It looks super cool. So let's do this. And we never did because, you know, it does cost money to make those things and road cases are far better.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when we look at a gigging musician, and we look at the road that is traveled of a gigging musician, the looks matter. And I think that's cool. Tone is, of course, king. So now find something that has great tone that looks awesome. Mm. Now, cutting through the mix, very important. As you mentioned before, you know, the band appreciated that it was easy to hear. But I'm going to ask you this question. Is 5 watts enough for a gigging musician?
That's another thing that, you know, when you go on the forums, people talk about that all the time. And I'm under the thought, and some of the people listening to this podcast are going to end up coming back at me on this. But my statement is that outside of tone, because you put a microphone in front of everything nowadays anyway, it doesn't matter if it's a 1 watt amplifier. It's going to work great because it's going through a much bigger wattage amplifier that's going to the house PA anyway. So absolutely, I tend to like bigger iron for the tone of them. But as far as necessity, no. I mean, yeah, absolutely. So when on the forums, when I hear people talk about that, you know, about, oh, how many watts do you need? You know, they'll say things like that. And I'm like, you obviously haven't played out enough because they're all like, I need an amp that'll keep up with a drummer. That's what you hear a lot.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, in the world of in-ears or even, it doesn't, you know, even if you have a wedge in front of it, have the sound guy put a little bit in the wedge for you.
Yeah.
Get what you like the way it sounds.
See, and I'm glad you put it that way because we are actually on a very similar point because we're not talking about modelers, but I'm going to say that a modeler makes no sound. Mm-hmm. So how do you know what you're playing on stage? They pump it through a monitor or they pump it through your in-ears. Sure. So now let's go to 5 watts. It doesn't matter if it's 5 watts. Do you like the way it sounds? Fantastic.
Yeah.
If you like the way it sounds, mic'd up, they'll put it in your in-ears or you can put it through the wedge and you're good to go. Now it's going to sound different. And the reason why it's going to sound different is because it has the color of the microphone, the color of the EQ, and the color of the wedge that is sending and the speakers that are in it, sending it back at you. So if you don't like that, then 5 watts is not enough to deal with that drummer. So now we go, all right, is 15 watts enough? And I would say it depends. Once again, are you running this thing clean or are you running this thing driven? A driven 15 watts is loud.
Yeah.
And a clean 15 watts is pretty loud. So I think 15 could do it. What are your thoughts?
Well, and it depends on the drummer. This last February, I was playing at the Pittsburgh event and I had Jay Mickelson playing with me. The drummer in Echelon is named Lowell and his nephew is Jay. And Jay's played with me off and on for years. He's been playing in Pittsburgh with a punk band. He used to play with a country band. Now he's been playing with a punk band.
Oh man, I bet you he was loud.
Oh my gosh. I could not believe how different he was. And John Doherty, you know, was an engineer in the front of that thing. And you know,
our left-handed drummer.
Yeah. And it wasn't that big of an event. And I could not believe the difference. The very first event I ever played with Jay, he was, I played when he was in high school, but I think the first one I paid him for was an event in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was in college. And I had to get him to hit the drums harder because he was so conditioned to play quiet. And I'm like, no, hit him here, smack those things. Oh my gosh, at this event, playing with the punk band? Dang. So you're going to love this part, though.
Here are the brushes. Take these brushes. Now I hit him really hard. Gosh.
It was so loud. And the way I do those events is I have my amplifier off stage facing backwards. And I'm using a 412 cab anyway, so there's no sound coming out of the back of the amplifier. It's all going opposite of the crowd. And yeah. I have John Doherty put a little bit of me in my monitor, you know, and I never have to put that much in there, but that's good. Jay, the drummer, he hops up on there, previously playing with a punk band, puts his earplugs in, and then decides to set the volume of his monitor. And I'm not kidding you, Doc.
Yeah.
He had my amplifier coming out of his monitor so loud, I didn't even turn my monitor on. All weekend long, I played guitar, hearing my guitar out of the drummer's monitor behind
yes.
me.
Yes.
That's how loud it was. John can back all this up. He was there. I'm not exaggerating a tad bit.
Did you appreciate the fact that you could actually hear it from behind you instead of right in front of you?
It was different.
Did you like it better?
I couldn't believe it. I was like, everybody's okay with this? Because it was stinking loud out there. But
yeah.
Yeah. But I'm like, all right. I actually did actually have him turn the guitar down a little bit in his monitor because it was actually too loud for me on stage. I was like,
okay, next time you play with Jay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to set up the half stack right in front of him and just turn that sucker up and blare it right at him and let it bleed in all the drum mics. That's the only way you're really going to be heard.
Yeah, there you go. He'd probably
this is
love
what
it.
Happens when you have a drummer doing the mixing. I'm just saying. It's how you'll be heard.
I don't know.
Can I get less guitar in my snare? Can I get less guitar in my kick? Wow, the overhead has a whole lot of guitar in it.
Excellent.
As I look at this, you know, it's interesting because we get to 15 watts and we go, is that enough to be this like gigging musician? And people will say that all the time. Oh, is an AC-15 going to keep up? Is a Blues Junior going to keep up? And the answer is it should. It should definitely. And if it doesn't, you have a drummer problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when people start saying, well, does 25 watts work? Is 50 enough? Is 100 watts enough? Well, at this point, I say it actually has more to do with how do you like the tone of 25 watts, 50 watts, 100 watts? Because as you said, the iron makes a big difference. That transformer makes a big difference. And I find myself gravitating towards the Marshall all the time. And I can turn the Marshall down to 95 dB and go, man, that sounds amazing. And I can turn my 15 watt up to 95 dB and go, man, that sounds really good. So why not play the 50?
Yeah, that's what I've done my entire life. Well, at least since I think I got the Marshall in around 2002 or somewhere around there. Since then. Man, my first amplifier I toured with was a Fender Twin, and that's an 80-watt amplifier.
True.
Ugh.
And it's also 85 pounds. It's more pounds per watt.
Yeah, it's awful. You know, thinking about that, is it loud enough to keep up with the drummer? I did hear one band one time and a guy who was complaining about not being able to hear himself on stage. And his tone, though, he was using a Vox Valvetronics, and it came with, you know, those things have a lot of effects on them. And yep. a lot of the patches have way too much effects going on that you should really use, but they want to show you this is what it can do, but you can turn them down. He didn't turn them down. So he had this heavy chorus with a lot of reverb, but also in his bedroom, he liked to turn the bass all the way up and the mid-range all the way down. And he had this love, this big thumping tone that he absolutely loved. And he took that sound and he put it on the stage for the first time. This was the first time he'd ever played at an event like this. And he put that amp up on stage and then the drummer started playing and the bass player started playing. And he goes, I cannot hear myself. And I walked over there because it was loud. He kept turning his amp up. And it was actually really loud, but it was just, he was getting an education on what guitar frequencies cut through a mix.
Yeah.
He took out all the frequencies that the guitar needs to be able to speak, you know, so he wasn't hearing it. It was just disappearing. So the problem wasn't volume. The problem wasn't that his amp wasn't loud enough because he was thinking it was. He's like, I got it turned up so loud. and I should be able to hear myself, but I can't. It's like, well, let's take the bass, turn it down. Let's take the mids, turn it up. Mm-hmm. He didn't like it that much though at first, because it's not the sound he was used to.
Right.
But that's where the guitar lives. It's an upper mid-range high instrument.
Well, that actually brings me to the Mesa Boogie. And I've talked about this before, is that I've owned a couple of Mesa Boogies. And every time that I've owned the Mesa Boogie, I've found that the Marshall cut right through the mix. And the Mesa had trouble. Mesas are known for their deep, low bass notes. And Marshalls and Fenders are known for their big searing mids. And so, yeah, when I would play in front of that Mesa, I'd be like, dang, that sounds amazing. And then I would take it to the gig and I go, okay, why can I not hear myself? And of course, what is the big thing about a Mesa? How are you supposed to run that little EQ? Power V.
Yeah, yeah.
What does the Power V do? Gets rid of your mids. Okay, so we scoop the mids and it sounds better by itself.
Yeah.
It does. Mm-hmm. But not in a band mix. It makes it very difficult. It makes it difficult for a sound engineer. And I think that there are some Mesa Boogie amps out there that are fantastic for cutting through a mix, like a Lone Star amp.
Mm.
Cuts through a mix really well.
Yeah.
It's also not bass heavy. And no. The Mark IV or the Mark V, great amps. And you can do all the switches and all the different things and actually get a really good tone out of it, as long as you're not trying to get that thug, chuggity, chug, chug, chug out of it.
Yeah.
So that actually brings up, since we're talking about Mesa, should you own a boutique amp? Do you think it's worth it to own a boutique amp? Are they really all that different?
I'd said earlier that we're kind of, you and I were born at just the end of the right time of the golden age of guitar players.
Yeah.
We got to experience some of it, but boy, before us, you know, the 60s and 70s and 80s, those guys, yep. You know, part of that, though, is too, is they had very few options. You know, we were talking about, like I said, I'm not sure exactly where this is all going to go as far as like essential amplifiers. You know,
yeah.
There's, you know, there is kind of like certain amps that goes, you think that go with certain styles of guitar or different styles of music that you play. But back in like the first, you know, 30 years of when music really took off,
yeah.
There really were only three options: Fender, Vox, if you're in England, and Marshall. You know, it was kind of that; those were your options. And so, every amp that's out there now that's in the boutique kind of thing, outside of the Dumble, which is really kind of its own thing, but even the Dumble was based on a Fender amplifier initially.
It was based on a Bassman.
Was it? I was thinking it was the Blackface or the Tweeds.
Oh, well, it was a Blackface Bassman. I thought.
Yeah, it might have been. So. I know the first Marshall was based on the Bassman, and the Mesa Boogie was based on the Princeton, the Fender Princeton.
Now, I could be wrong, but if I remember correctly, Dumble based his very first amplifier off of the tone of Robin Ford, which Robin Ford played a Blackface Bassman.
Oh, well, maybe. Maybe.
So I could be wrong. I'm going to look that up. If I'm wrong, I'm editing it out. But if I'm okay. Right, it's staying.
As it should be, Dr. T.
And that brings up an interesting point as well. And I think we're going to come back to that point after we take a break for the sponsors, because I want to make sure we actually get this in, because I could totally see us just rolling through this. So we're going to take a break for the sponsors, and then we are going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about this interesting idea of boutique amps. Are they really all that different? And what are they trying to do? So let's take a break for the sponsors. If you are looking for a way to help support the Tweed Couch and it costs no money to you, then check out our YouTube channel and become a subscriber. Also, you can tell someone about the podcast and share an episode with them. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support. Here's another sponsor. Are you wanting to join a party with a purpose? If you love music and camping, then come to LifeFest in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I'll see you there. Here is our last sponsor. Since 2003, the Kretzmann Guitar Company has been repairing and building guitars. In 2021, Kretzmann started a production of a solid body electric guitar for anyone, student to expert. You can check them out at kretzmannguitars.com. Okay, well, we are back, and I do want to kind of talk about this. And as this idea of, should you own a boutique amp, and are they different? You mentioned Double, and I'm glad you mentioned them, because that was something that I thought, you know, they're different. And then I went, well, they're different only by their technique, because originally they were jumping after something else. And ultimately what I find is most anybody who is trying to make some sort of a boutique amp, they're trying to model some version of a Fender, some version of a Vox, or a Marshall, which is ironic because a Marshall was first trying to emulate a Fender.
Yeah.
And then Mesa, which was considered boutique at first, was trying to emulate a Fender. Vox was just trying to keep up with Fender. So really, I think Fender is probably the gold standard that nobody wanted to hear.
Yeah, maybe we should
stop. Like nobody wanted to hear that it's the gold standard.
Yeah, and maybe we should stop putting we always say Fender, Vox, and Marshall. Maybe we need to eliminate Marshall. All amps go back to Fender as United States and the British amp of Vox.
Yeah.
Now, there are some others there, Orange, that were all around, but it's not really the ones that... I don't know of any amp company, this would be interesting to research for me, is anybody who has tried to do a boutique amplifier off of an Orange amplifier.
Yeah, I would be curious. I know there's lots of modelers, but we're not talking about modelers, that have an Orange or something like that.
Yeah.
But I look at it and I go, okay, well then let's talk boutique. And we jumped already to Dumble. When I look at that, I go, right, but Dumbles, even Dumbles that had the same name, did not have the same sound.
No.
And the biggest reason why was because Dumble worked very specifically with that musician to get what was responsive to that musician. And to that extent, when I go, are they different? You could look at a car amp. Sure, it's different. You could look at a Dr. Z. Sure, it's different. You could look at the Reason amps, like you had Reason amps. Sure.
Yeah.
You have a Nailer.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, these are all things that are different. At the same time, I think it has to speak to the musician. So to say, should you own a boutique amp? My question is, well, should you own a Fender? Should you own a Vox? Should you own a Marshall? Should you own a Mesa? It really does come down to what speaks to you. And to me, my Marshall speaks to me all the time. Yeah. And an AC-15 used to speak to me more. An AC-30 speaks to me a lot more now, which is interesting. It's a change in the way that either I play or I feel when I play it.
Well, I think I don't know if you're like me. I used to think the AC-15 is just the smaller version of the AC-30.
That's what I used to think.
The AC-30, 2 12-inch speakers, AC-15, half the wattage, 1 12-inch speaker, you know.
But the same amp, right? You know, it's the
same
amp. Yeah,
basically, they're the same amp. And they share. They're in the same family. But the mid-range is different. On an AC-15, it has less low end, and it has a more pronounced mid-range, which is why I like... The AC-30 is more of a more rounded sound. It still had, they both have, you can get the chimey top end to them, but they aren't the same amp.
No. And I think part of the reason why I've gravitated back towards an AC-30 is I hear the dynamics I get out of the AC-30. And this could be back to the iron of the Transformer. Mm. There is something to that, that when I play an AC-15, I go, man, that does it. It sounds great. That does it. And then I play an AC-30 and I go, in order for it to do it, it's louder, a lot louder. But dang, it does it better for what I want it compared to what, right? Thanks, Kenny. But, you know, you get the idea. So there is something to that. Now, you bought a Nailer. Nailer is considered a boutique amplifier, especially the time when you got it, back when they were made in Michigan.
Yep.
So why do you still own the Nailer then?
Because it doesn't sound like my Marshall, even though it's in that family. It's a modded Marshall sound. You know, Soldano was trying to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those boutique amps, we said, they're all trying to do something. Either they're trying to make an exact copy of what they say, like the early Fender amp sounded like or something, or specifically in the Marshalls, it's people trying to, I think the Naylor, okay, this is probably a better way to say it. The Naylor probably does a better job of capturing the tone of like the late 80s guitar sound that we hear coming from the record. It wasn't the way the Marshall actually sounded, but by the time they put all the effects and they EQ'd it and the microphone and they put it in the mix and the compression, we hear that guitar and go, wow, that's a Marshall amplifier. That's not the way the Marshall sounded like in the room. The Naylor amplifier sounds more like what some of our classic, you know, let's say like I said, a lot of like in the 80s, that smooth overdrive that's got some compression to it. You know, it sounds more like we're used to hearing.
Give me some tones. Are we talking AC/DC? Are we talking Journey? Are we talking are we talking about like Guns N' Roses?
No, we're not Poison? Guns N' Roses, not Guns N' Roses or AC/DC, because those are more classic, more raw, we would say.
Yes,
maybe
I would
more
agree.
Like King's X, maybe. I would say, you know, even though they didn't use them, a lot of the like Poison,
Whitesnake.
Yeah, Whitesnake is a perfect one. I was saying I'm saying Poison, but I'm like, yeah, they were a little more glam kind of. They might even use solid state stuff. But yeah, just those.
They might have been the Rack.
They might have been. But I think Whitesnake is a really good one, or Great White is another really good one.
Oh, I think the Naylor. I forgot about Great White.
I think the Naylor amp really does capture that kind of tone.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's the sound we're used to hearing in our heat. We grew up hearing these tones, and the amp out of the box provides a little bit more. A lot of the boutique rock and roll amps were trying to do that.
Yeah.
Now we've kind of moved past that, though, actually. Now it seems like there's a lot more companies that are just trying to make what the old, the 1971 metal plate Marshall amp, just make a recreation of it. They're not trying to mod anything. They're like the amps like Sir. There was an amp called Blockhead. I don't know if they're still out doing stuff. Mm-hmm. Rev amps are kind of doing this thing.
Yep.
And I listen to these amps, and they sound more like what the amps that you can't get without spending $6,000 for them, you know?
Yeah.
Now, granted, they're still expensive. They're still $2,000. But they're just trying to provide a need for what Marshall has stopped making.
Right. And to make the correlation to where guitar is, you look at Gibson. In the 70s, people wanted to have the 57, 58, 59, 60 Les Pauls. And they weren't making them. And they were like, yeah, we're not going to make that. And then we got to the 80s, and they were like, people were still saying, hey, I want those. And they went, fine, we'll make some versions of this. And in the 90s, you started seeing like the art collection and the historic collection and the heritage collections of Les Pauls. And ultimately they were trying to recreate these guitars that were made back in the late 50s. And most of those guitars would be like $2,000, which was quite a bit then. But if you wanted to get a 58 or a 59 Les Paul, an actual 58 or 59 Les Paul, it was like $3,000. Well, that's not all that different. But at the same time, at that time, that was a big difference. So in which case, it made sense. Well, here we are in the amp world, and people want Marshall JMPs. What they want are JCM-800s, not modded 800s, modded JMPs. They want the actual real deal. But the problem is to get a real deal will cost $5,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we're starting to see that little turn to things.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll ever become like Les Paul era where it's like, oh, well, it'll be $500,000 for our Marshalls or something like that. No, it'll never be that. But I do think that there is something to that. And that actually brings us to my next point that I wanted to bring up, which is if we're going to talk about essential amps, nostalgia is a thing. I got 3 amps back here. I got a half stack. I'm not touring with a half stack anymore. I fly places. I can't fly with a half stack. So in which case, why do I still own a half stack? Because that's the half stack I toured with, and I love playing it. It's nostalgia. Okay, well, what about my Vox? Well, I have a Vox AC-15. Am I going to sell it? I mean, I guess I could, but it's a special edition Vox. Like, it's got this cool, like, Tolex to it that you just can't get anymore. Okay, well, there's something to that. My little Fender Tweed amp, I love the look of it. I love having a Fender Tweed amplifier. There's a nostalgia that goes to it. So I think that's it. When we talk about essential amps, I think to everyone, an essential amp might be defined by a person's history and possibly just what simply inspires them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You own a Naylor, an AC30, a Fender Twin, a Marshall JCM800. Do you still have the Black Star?
Yes. Two of them.
Two of them. Okay. And you look at all those. Did I miss any, by the way?
Yeah, AC15.
And the AC15.
And an 80s G&K, Galen Krueger. Yeah, GK. Galen Krueger head, solid state head. That is Rush in a box, actually.
Yes. And you look at all that and you go, Lloyd, why do you own all these amps? That doesn't sound essential to me. Well, is it tough to get rid of a Marshall half stack? Meaning, like, do you want to get rid of that?
Is it tough sentimental or yeah, in the market
emotionally?
Today? Emotionally. Yeah, just like you said, that amp and I have had a lot of years playing together. If I don't need the money, I see no reason in getting rid of it. Besides that, I still play it.
Yep. Is it difficult for you to get rid of the Naylor?
Yeah, same reason.
Yep. Is it difficult for you to get rid of that Fender Twin?
It was the one that I first toured with back in 89. So yes.
Yep. Is it difficult for you to get rid of the Black Star heads?
Not as hard. I could get rid of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it difficult for you to get rid of the Voxes, the AC15 or the AC30?
I don't play the AC15 at all, so no, I could probably get rid of that. But again, no reason to get rid of it yet. And so, you know, it sits in the house. Sometimes I plug into it in there.
And I think nostalgia is a thing. I really do. I think that when we talk about essential, you know, someone might look at it and be like, oh, you own like 9 amplifiers. Why on earth would you own 9 amplifiers? Oh, that's so excessive. But at the same time, it sounds like of those like 9 amplifiers that you have, 5 or 6 of those might be considered in your heart essential. Unless, of course, you needed to pay for medical treatment or, you know, like there was a reason to get rid of it. So that makes perfect sense.
Nostalgia does have a purpose, but I play every amp that I have. I said the AC15 sits in the house. I haven't played it as much, which is why maybe if I was going to get rid of one, I might, but it's a Vox, you know, it's still cool and they're great amplifiers, but I do have a tendency to be like, yeah, if I'm not using it, why do I have it? You know, but I play all of them.
Right.
Although I didn't plan on having all those, you know, I did have a 4-amp rule for a bunch of years, got a little out of control, and I still have space in the, I have a little bit of space in the room where the amps are at, so I can still fit a couple more. So, you know, if I got room,
you know, as you are currently doing, smoke.
Well,
because
like I said, I left out, you know, like, you know, Friedman. You know, yes. he is real. Another guy who's really jumped into a little bit of both of, he makes basically clones of some of the classic, one is called a small box. And it's basically just a classic 50 watt Marshall, but he also does a lot of amps where he'll kind of have one channel's more the classic. Here's the way they used to sound. And here channel 2 is for those who just need a little bit more gain, because in the 80s, in the realm of, they called it metal back then. You know, we kind of call it hard rock now, or I mean, even like Def Leppard isn't even really called, I think they're considered kind of just classic rock or rock now. But in the day, they were thought of as heavy metal or hard rock bands. And these bands a lot of them were using the JCM 800s, but to get enough gain out of them, they had a lot of them modded to get a little more gain, or they'd hit them with a boost.
Yeah.
So that's what guys like Friedman are kind of trying to give you that sound too, along with the classics as well.
Yeah. So this probably brings us to our last thing. And I was going to talk about how there is these studios and there are these collectors and everything. And what is their essentials? But honestly, I'm more interested in this question because we can all go, oh yeah, of course, a studio. Well, they would want to have things available. People might show up. But there's rentals for all that kind of stuff. We actually talked before all of this. We talked about Savage Audio having just a wall of amplifiers that all were sought after. And they would go, oh, you need it for a recording? Yeah, just take it. Why don't you bring it back like Wednesday? And they're like, really? I mean, this is like, this is a big deal. Like, you're handing me a 68 Plexi.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me just to bring it back Wednesday?
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Bring it back.
It was amazing.
Can I borrow the 1965 cab too? Oh yeah, sure. Just bring it back. Like, okay, yeah, I'll bring it back. I'll bring it back. Do I need to sign it out? No. We remember.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They knew where we lived.
So, oh yeah, that's true. They did. So with that said, you know, we could talk about those things, but to me, I think the better closing statement to all of this is to ask this question. You got one amp. It's all you can have. I'm sorry. But the house is going to be foreclosed. You're going to have to sell 8 amplifiers. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I've got 3 amplifiers right now. It looks like I got to get rid of 2 of them. So what do you have? What is your one amp? This is the only one I can still own. Which one you got?
The one I haven't purchased yet.
Wow.
Yeah. I've always had this itch. And I was like, if I was going back in time, knowing what I know now about what I like in an amplifier, I would love to have an early Marshall 212 JMP combo, 50 watts, little four holder.
Okay.
That's what I would want. Something that it's a great pedal platform, which is what you and I do a lot anyway.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be cranked up really loud, but it's got that. But at the same time, you can get that. You can jumper them if you want. You can drive that sucker and get the Marshall grind out of it. You can play any style you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic clean amplifiers too, but they also, they work with low output tellies as well as they work with Les Pauls, which has been kind of my gripe about Vox amplifiers is the mid range of the Vox and the mid range of a Les Paul is sometimes a little bit too much for me sometimes.
Yeah.
Not so with a Marshall. It seems it works for anything I'm playing. And I've never had that amplifier. And they're kind of hard to get, actually. Otherwise, I probably would have had one now. But that would be the amp. That would be the one. That would be my Desert Island amplifier.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I remember when I was searching for my Marshall and I was at Willie's American Guitars in their old building in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And I remember being at the building and they had a 112 JCM 800 and I plugged into it and I went, that is fantastic. But it didn't fit the image in my head. The image in my head was a half stack, but I saw this thing and I was like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. And it was like $1,000. And I looked at it and I went, but it doesn't fit the image in my head. And I talked to Willie and I said, I don't understand why this sounds so good and I really would like it, but it's not what fits the image in my head. And he said, well, I want you to understand it's modded. And I went, okay, how is it modded? And he said that he sent it to Savage Audio. They decided that it didn't sound very good. So they pulled the speaker out and they put in a 200 watt bass amp speaker.
Wow.
And it sounded phenomenal. And they were like, that's it. That's the way this amp sounds.
Wow.
And I got it. I was like, yes, it's perfect. It's wonderful. And since then, I have never plugged into a Marshall combo that was like an 800 or a JMP. I'm not talking about the smaller one that it, what is it? It's not the 1987X. It's the
74?
Yeah, it might be the 1974. Yeah, you get a tone and a volume. Yeah. And then the other channel gives you the tremolo and all that kind of stuff. Other than that, I have never plugged into a Marshall combo that I've gone, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, if have you plugged into a Marshall combo like that, a JMP combo, four hole, two 12s, and gone, that's it?
Yeah, only one. Boy, that was... So when Echelon was touring, it was at a music store. It was already at that point there, wasn't a couple thousand for it at that point, because they're pretty rare.
Yeah, that's probably right.
They didn't make a lot of them. But like I said, those era of Marshalls, their clean sound, I don't want to say it's Fender, it's because it's not, but I mean, it's that 70s clean, Marshall clean. It's different than the 800s. You know, with the 800s alone, they got a beautiful clean too, but it's different. It's always a little more crisp on the high end, I guess.
Well, it's when they finally made their separation from it being a bassman.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because even like the early, like the late 60s, the 68 JMP Plexi, you can hear the bassman in it. But those early 70s, you lose the bassman, and Marshall found a voice.
Yeah.
All their own.
Yeah. Yeah. So how about you?
Okay, this is going to sound interesting, because you might be like, oh yeah, you're just going to use the Marshall. Of course you're going to use the Marshall. And I would agree that the Marshall is probably the amplifier that I will have the biggest problem ever getting rid of. Yes, it's a 412. Yes, it's 50 watts, but it's me. At the same time, I will say that if all I can have is one the rest of my life, I'm only getting older. My cars are only going to get smaller. And so because of that, I'm probably looking at a Fender amp, a lower wattage Fender amp, and an EQ pedal of some sort. Whether it be like the Joyo American Sound, which is essentially an EQ change.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably what I'm looking for. That if I have only one, I got to get rid of it all and I can only have one. Right now, it might be I'm going to keep the Marshall just because the nostalgia beats too much. But if the nostalgia wasn't there, I might just keep that Pro Junior and put an EQ pedal with it and look for the right Fender amplifier to do that. I don't know. That's where I'm at.
Because of, like we said earlier, some of these companies are kind of coming full circle, and they're making amplifiers with modern features on them that are not trying to mod anything, trying to just recreate the stuff that I love from the 70s, you know, in the early 80s. Like I said, Rev is making some really great stuff right now. Victory Amplification, you and I talked about it off air one time about the Deputy.
Yeah.
It's just, they're great. So that one, I guess I love all my amps here, but it's kind of that disease, and I love amplifiers so much that if I was forced to take from the herd that I have right now, I'd probably have to stick with the Marshall.
Yeah. And that's where I'm stuck, is that I look at it and I go, literally, it's the idea of this like gun to the head, or the situation of, okay, the family will suffer majorly if you do not get rid of all the amps.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm keeping the Marshall.
Yeah.
The others can go.
Yeah.
But if I get a few little extra choices and nostalgia's out, then I'll go lower wattage and an EQ pedal and just be super happy.
Yeah.
It's amazing what that question really does. I will have a harder time with a guitar. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
We'll see where that goes. That's going to be a conversation for later.
Yeah. You know, one last little thing, as I know we're, for those few that are still hanging on, you said about essential amplifiers, and I said, I wasn't sure how you were going to take this. You know, was it more like what amp is essential for like a certain, like if you're playing jazz or if you're playing country, you know, like heading people in a direction, it's like, this is where you should look. And generally we would answer that question and say, well, look at what your favorite artists that play in that style. What are they using? Start there. Paul was really good at that. He was like, what's Stevie Ray Vaughan using? Okay, let's get that. And so he bought a clone of a Vibroverb.
A reproduction
of the Vibroverb, because Stevie Ray Vaughan played the Vibroverb along with a few others, but that was a core of his thing. So I would tell people generally start there. And I was thinking about that, though, and going, you know, because all of these amps, the player, you know, you can make all of them work for whatever you're playing. You can play country on a Fender, a Marshall, or a Vox, or an Orange, or whatever. They work for all of those. Jazz, you could do that. Blues, you could do that. And I thought, you know, can you do that with the modern, like, you know, like the heavy, heavy metal stuff, that the seven string guitar and the really low, low stuff? You can't do that on a Fender, a Vox, or most Marshalls. Mm. You need
a Splon.
Yeah, or an Engel, or the
Ubershall.
PB 60, the used to be the 5150. It's now the 60, And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting.
6505.
Yeah, and I thought it's kind of interesting. I don't think, you know, that's the one genre of music that you could take any of the amps we just mentioned and probably turn the gain out of and get them to work for the other styles. But they don't work the other way around. And it's a lot because of that tight, big, low end. It's got to be big iron, and it's got to have a big output, and it's just got to be able to handle all that. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And I'm just thinking it out loud.
Yeah, and that's brilliant. I think that if anybody is still hanging on and they're listening to this, and they all of a sudden go, "Yeah, you have not mentioned anything that deals with my style, which is deathcore or you know, hardcore or like, you know, heavy chuggity chug chug." Whatever, then sure. Yeah, I'm with you. There are pedals that help with all of that.
Sure.
But you have to keep in mind, your foundation is your foundation. And the amps that we've been talking about so far would not be successful in that foundation.
No, I don't think so.
It's the reason why Mesa is such a big deal. Because Mesa is actually a good foundation for most of those things.
Yeah, the rectifiers, when they came out, no, that's another one. I think a lot of those does you that. But yeah, very cool.
So with all that said, we should probably go ahead and jump to final thoughts. And as we go to final thoughts, I'm going to go ahead and kind of start it out. And as I started out, my main thing is that I realize that there is a difference between need and necessity. I get it. There's a difference between want and essential. But the person who defines that is the player. So if you are the bedroom guy and you do have kids in the other room and they are sensitive to sound, or they're babies and they need to sleep, what I will say is you're the one that defines what is your essential. If it's nostalgia, if it is the time in life, if it is the frequency response you need, if it is the mojo you carry because you look at it and you go, "Oh, basket weave," or "Oh, tweed," you know, whatever it is, "Oh, silver face," you know, whatever it is, all of those things, they make up what you want. And you're the one that actually defines what essential is, whether that means it is three amplifiers like me, or nine like you, potentially 10.
Or 11.
This is all decided on the player. And you don't have to feel bad about, "I own extra amplifiers," as long as you can afford it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got me thinking about the other amp that I have not scratched the itch, is the Fender Tweed Deluxe. That would also be another maybe a contender for just, that's just the one amplifier I take.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are pretty awesome. My final thought is, going back to the essential idea, I wonder how long, are we, Dr. T, just the end of a bygone era that people care about amplifiers? Like, when we age out, is there really a group behind us that much that is going to find amps essential at all? And we're not going to go into modelers.
Nope.
But I do wonder if right now there's still companies that are able to make these amplifiers, because there's still a large group of us that keep getting older that are buying these suckers. And a lot of us have an income where we can afford them more. Will this Marshall that's $6,000 today, 30, 40 years from now, will you not be able to give it away?
I think that things are cyclical. I also think that there is something to the fact that there is people out there who go, I don't want a recreation. I want the original. And to that extent, it reminds me actually of like some movies where it's like, if you've seen the movie, then great, you've seen it. If you haven't, don't go see it because I don't want to like tell you you should go see this. But there's a movie called Basketball. And in the movie, there is this guy who owns sports stuff and he owns Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he's like in a glass case. And the thing is, he didn't want a painting. He didn't want a statue. He wanted Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he paid for it. And I think that there is going to be still a market out there for people who want to own a 1981 Marshall JMP, which is mine. And there's going to be people who want your 1973 Twin that has Altec speakers. What, the Altec? Oh my gosh, the Altec is what, you know, there are people out there who are going to want your 2019 Gibson Les Paul in a bourbon burst. And they will pay premium because they don't want the recreation. They want the creation. And so I would say that there is still going to be people out there who want it. Now, are they going to be from America? Possibly not. Is it possible that the stuff that outlasts our lifetime isn't going to outlast being in America? I don't know. I mean, my Marshall's from the UK, so
yeah,
I've already taken it from that country.
Yeah,
so
you and me, brother.
You know. So that's the thing is that it's like it's really interesting to think about. But I do think that it's going to be worth something, whether it be in our lifetime. If you hit a point where you're like, I don't know that we can even give it away because of the modelers, hold on to it. Give it to your favorite nephew or niece. Like, make it happen because yeah, it's going to be worth something.
Maybe. I'm sure guitars will. I'm not sure about amps. So we'll see.
So with all that said, I thank you for being here on the couch. I thank you for having this conversation with me. And I think that this was worthwhile. This was actually better to do before guitars because I think guitars is going to be harder for me.
I'm looking forward to the guitar one.
I'm not, but we will do it someday. So with all that said, thank you, Lloyd, for being here on the couch.
Yeah. Thanks, Doc.
All right. Till next time. Well, that's all the time we have for the Tweed Couch Guitar Therapy session. If you like what you heard, make sure you leave 5 stars and a review. Also, be sure to check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And remember, you are your greatest asset. Until next time.